Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:44 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is May 12th. Well, the Nasdaq was down another 120 points today, coming back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. I've pointed out on multiple occasions this is the secular trend, and it's very unusual for a secular bull market to see prices decline significantly below the 1,000-day moving average and recover. And if they do pull back, they recover very quickly from it. So we're at a critical juncture. Then there's been a very clear buy the dip mentality to this market for years. And it works. And it always works in a secular bull market. If you buy the dip, you will be rewarded. So obviously, there is a tendency to want to buy the dip. So when we look at the intraday chart, we can see that we had an initial rally and it lasted all the way for the first maybe 2 hours of trading today. And then the market started giving it back up. So we're still in this environment where we're very risk averse. But then we can think about the 10-year yield, because now we are looking at a weekly Q reversal. It was down again in here today. This is four consecutive days on the downside. And when you start stringing those declines together, well, then you get a rather large decline on the week. So certainly some support starting to come through for bonds. And it's a very oversold condition. So it's really not all that surprising that we get at least some pause and consolidation around this big psychological 3% level. And it's equally true for even longer dated issues. So these are the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market. And now yields are starting to come back down. And obviously, that is throwing some shade on the question about just how high are interest rates going to go. Well, the dollar remains really quite firm, and we still see a lot of inflationary pressures. So there's obviously then the market, the stock market is reacting to weaker economic growth, but so is the bond market. And we're starting to now see that stocks are more reactive to the threat to growth. And that bonds are starting to react more to the threat to growth than they are to rising inflationary pressures. So we're still pointing towards stagflation. Now, the strength of the dollar is having a lot of negative effects around the world. So if we then just flip it around and look at the Asia dollar index, China has been devaluing its currency. And that's encouraging just about every other Asian currency to do the same thing. But of course, the country that started devaluing its currency first was Japan. And there we're starting to see the yen beginning to attract some safe haven flows. So, and I think Japan is the kind of place people go as a safe haven for the simple reason that it's predictable. Everybody knows that nothing really is going to change there, and they're going to hold on to their rather privileged position of being a creditor nation, even though there is an extraordinary amount of debt in the public sphere. So, the strength of the yen is also indicative of risk-off behavior. But then, of course, we also have what's going on in China. So you have Li Keqiang out trying to champion recovery, but the renminbi continues to decline. And every country that deals with China or where China is its largest trading partner is under pressure now as the renminbi devalues in a very abrupt manner. And you can see too that the size of the weekly declines is almost universal. So, this is also a managed, just like everything else in China, this is a managed devaluation. And of course, we're also looking at the first offshore bond default in China, and that's shaking confidence as well. But I think it's also relevant now to just pay attention to what's happening in some Asian stock markets, but to do so on a constant currency basis. So if we look at the CSI 300 in dollars, well, it's still weak and hasn't really demonstrated any kind of convincing evidence that more than a short-term low has been found. The Nifty index in India is also underperforming. Now, the rupee went to a new all-time low in here today. So that's weighing on the foreign currency performance of the Nifty index, which is back testing the region of the low from back in March. And it's also coming back into the region of that 1,000-day moving average. Now, it's important to highlight that India tends to pull back through that 1,000-day with quite a lot of regularity. And every one of those occasions where we've had a deep oversold condition below the 1,000-day has been a buying opportunity. And that's been equally true for decades. So I don't think there's any real reason to doubt that it's not going to continue to be a buying opportunity when we see very deep oversold conditions in India. When we then think about Indonesia, it's obviously another very high population country with major commodity exports, but the JCI was down strongly, or I guess down in a very dynamic manner over the course of this week, most particularly in US dollar terms, and confirming resistance in the region of the peak from over the last decade. This has been a very lengthy ranging phase for US dollar denominated investors. Now, if we look at this in local currencies, it's not going to look quite the same, but nonetheless, it's an awfully big downward dynamic. Well, the Philippines has a new prime minister, so they've brought back the Marcos clan, and his vice president is Rodrigo Duterte's daughter, so she changed political parties and ran against her own father, which is a rather interesting development. But of course, he then stood aside as well. So the Filipino market is back in the region of the lows over the last year. And on in a US dollar basis, it really hasn't been firing at all for most of the last decade. And there's been a downward bias. So one would have to be prepared for the potential that this is going to break lower and do so in a dynamic manner, and not least because of potential currency weakness. And we can think about the Filipino currency, because it had been particularly notable for its strength all the way through to the middle of 2021. And now it is clearly trending downwards, or the dollar is trending higher against it in a really consistent manner. Now, when we then think about what's going on in Australia, commodity prices are starting to come under pressure, but energy prices are still quite steady. And the local currency performance of the ASX isn't anything to write home by. With there's been big downward dynamics the last couple of weeks in a row. So Australia is certainly not insulated from what's going on in the global economy. But in US dollar terms, we can see how much of a difference that makes when we incorporate the currency. So we're really right back in the region, or we were at least back in the region of the peaks from a international currency basis, and now it is breaking down and through that 1,000-day moving average. So this, of course, does beg some questions about just where is going to be safe to put some money. Now, the UK has been trading on a lower valuation, and in many respects was a value proposition. But in US dollar terms, because of the weakness of the pound, it's breaking downwards to new reaction lows, and that's representative of the experience of foreign investors. From a local currency perspective, it's held up considerably better because of the weakness of the pound. But nonetheless, it is coming back down to test the lower side of that range. Then I think it's also worth highlighting that the euro broke downwards to new reaction lows in here today. So, from a foreign perspective, the stock market is underperforming in no uncertain terms. And it's also worth highlighting that the 1,000-day moving average doesn't really mean anything if you haven't had a trend. And Europe has been going sideways for an awfully long time. So we're certainly looking at a deep oversold condition in the short term, but then not a lot of evidence to suggest that that's going to change anytime soon either. Now, if we're thinking then about commodity producers, the Brazilian market tends to simply be a commodity proxy. And in US dollar terms, it's been going sideways for a lengthy period and is back in the region of the lower side of the range that's been forming for the last 18 months. But the Brazilian real is somewhat steadier than other currencies and is well supported by exceptionally high interest rates on a relative basis. So the Bovespa index is beginning to demonstrate at least near-term support. Now, Bitcoin tends to be a lightning rod for speculation when things are going up, but that's equally true for when things are going down. And Bitcoin came right down and tested the 1,000-day moving average in here today, and then it began to rebound. So it's up about $250. It's, I think, rather interesting to look at this on a log scale chart and then to put in that moving average. Because if we look at the log scale chart on a monthly basis and just put in a 5-year moving average, well, then we're going to see that it does find support in the region of that 5-year moving average on multiple occasions. So it did it again in here today. So obviously, then the question is it going to bounce from here? Now, of course, this is simple moving average, and I generally tend to look at logarithmic moving averages because I think that giving some weight to recent prices does make sense. I think perhaps most importantly, though, if it's going to bounce from this area, then we'll need to see a failed downside break below 30,000. So if it is now trading about $1,400 below that level, if it rebounds and does so in a dynamic manner and then holds the move back above 30,000, well, then we'll have some evidence that support has been found in this area. I think a lot of people have been conditioned to want to buy around the 1,000-day moving average in Bitcoin because it's been the right decision on multiple occasions, and subsequently, it has tended to multiply. So, if one were buying at 27,000, then one can anticipate that following that kind of mean reversion, it would subsequently multiply in value. And that's why people have been so well conditioned to buy in these kinds of circumstances. So it then, of course, begs the question, has anything really changed? Well, the one thing that has changed is that we're clearly in a liquidity tightening environment. Now, we also had liquidity tightening environments in late 2018 and again in March of 2020. It was after those events that central banks then very clearly stated that they're going to cut interest rates, they're going to make liquidity more available, and then risk assets took off, and Bitcoin in particular did especially well. So we're not quite there yet. We haven't yet seen central banks announcing in clear terms that they're going to relent and start making liquidity more available. When they do, it would be reasonable to anticipate that Bitcoin should rebound. And risk assets generally should rebound, and the dollar would roll over. And Of course, if we're going to move back into quantitative easing, well, then it would also help to depress some of the bond yields. So, obviously, a lot hinges on what are central banks prepared to do. But of course, we're also in an environment where some commodity prices remain really quite firm. And wheat popped on the upside in here today, following the USDA report that global supplies are going to be significantly lower in here this year. Natural gas remains really quite firm, having pulled back really exceptionally violently for a couple of days. It's beginning to regroup and pushing back up again. So this is contributing to inflationary pressures as well. And now we also have this question about oil, because it remains within this range. And it was a lot quieter today than it has been over the last couple of days, but still recouped the intraday loss to push higher. There's obviously potential here that we are about to see the Ukraine situation become front page news again. It's pretty much receded into the background for the last while, but commodity shortages are starting to exacerbate. And I thought it was also interesting that when we adjust the total return for the wheat price and look at that from a just because the nice thing about total return prices is that they take out the contangos, or at least they incorporate the contangos. And there are now price series that go back rather a long time. So we can look at these exceptionally lengthy currency adjusted charts. So when we see that commodity prices from, for example, the EU, from the UN, has the global food price at new highs, they never seem to talk about what that means and where are they getting that price. Obviously, the price of food has risen, but so have incomes, and then it's not evenly distributed in terms of pricing or availability internationally. Now, this is not a log scale chart, so it looks like we haven't had any move at all in commodity prices. But if we were then to look at this on a logarithmic scale chart, well, then we can see that the recent move higher in percentage terms is similar to the big jump in inflation that we had heading a commodity price inflation heading into the crisis in 2007. So this move in commodities is at least as large as this one that we had between 2006 and 7. I think it's also particularly interesting that commodity prices peaked in nominal terms at back in 1996, and that pretty much coincided with the expansion of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade into the WTO, and then subsequently the removal of subsidies. So then commodity prices rose in nominal terms, but the purchasing power of the currencies depreciated, and that more than compensated for the move in the price of the commodities. So that also helps to highlight the fact that dollar depreciation tends to go hand in hand with commodity bull markets. And we're just not there yet in terms of the dollar rolling over. And we may not be there until we start to see clear evidence of interest rates beginning to fall back again. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today. I'll wish all the best to all of you.